Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we have an exciting episode today. We have a guest. We have Erin Atlas, who is the CEO of DreamMed Diabetes. So, Erin, we're so excited to have you. And if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself and describing a little bit about your background for our listeners.
Thank you very much, Van, and thank you very much, Natalie. Pleasure to be here today with you guys. Hello, everybody. Erin Atlas, co-founder, CEO of DreamMed Diabetes. DreamMed is an Israeli company. We have been in the field for a couple of years. We basically started as a technology development team that work inside one of the biggest centers to treat people with type 1 diabetes in Israel, under the direction of Professor Moshe Philip. So we were focused on automated insulin delivery. After publishing in New England Journal of Medicine, we finally licensed our technology to Medtronic. So now it's part of Medtronic 780G. And then we decided that we would like to continue and use our brain and technology in order to help as many people with diabetes as possible. So I'm happy to be here today and happy to share all of our things that are going on in the last year together with you guys.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah.
Right. We're really excited. And we definitely like the 780G algorithm. So it's very impressive that you guys actually created that. It's a very good algorithm. So I'm curious. I know that, you know, I'm familiar with years ago when you guys first had the technology to recommend basically insulin pump adjustments with the data. And I know you guys are using AI. And so I'm just kind of really curious, like, where you're at right now in terms of some of the functionality, some of the things that DreamMed can do.
Excellent question. You know, again, at the time, we thought we just a company that developed an algorithm. Let's just be able to integrate that into one of the platforms that are available in the market right now and really, really help on providers to optimize insulin therapy. Now, we're coming from a place that everyone can have an access to expert care back in our, you know, clinic in Schneider in Petah Tikva. But today, the real world is that it's not the reality of most of the people in the United States and globally. And in order to help them, what we basically build is Endo Digital, which is an automated care pathway platform that can help the providers basically manage their cohort, their population. What the platform can do is get data from different devices together. Today, we have a cloud-to-cloud connection with both Dexcom and Abbott. We have the ability to pull data from Tandem insulin pump and different kind of meters, integrate that data into the electronic medical record, and finally, basically operate on that data smart algorithm that can help a provider to optimize the insulin delivery for person with diabetes. In the past, we had only support on insulin pump, but today we're supporting any type of insulin titration module, you know, any type of insulin therapy like, you know, MDI, betwixt those, the meal estimation for type 1, for type 2, all of that is cleared by the FDA. We basically created the new product code within the FDA system on how to utilize CGM data with algorithms to give a recommendation on insulin titration. And when a provider is basically see that recommendation, he can do with a click of a button to get automatically the entire summary of the visit inside his EMR, and also to push the recommendation digitally to the patient. And if the patient is using insulin injection, it has a bolus calculator and the ability to automatically use whatever the provider told him. So that's what we have right now in terms of a product and the features.
Wow, that's incredible. This very weekend, Diane and I had a session at AED CES tech meeting, and she had to actually wear a crown and actually a magician type hat. And we made her look into a crystal ball and say, what do you want? And one of the things that, you know, we dream about having is this, right? I tell, how many times do I download where I say, you need to give the insulin before you eat, you need to give the insulin before you eat? Can your algorithm tell that to us and say, wow, 20 minutes or 30 minutes would be better for this person, or the carb ratio, no matter what they do, if they bolus 4 hours ahead of time, it's still going to be wrong, right? Where is that? Can you talk a little bit more about the intricacies of the algorithm? Not like, I don't need to know about the programming because you'll lose me immediately, but what does it do? So let's say I download you mentioned Tandem. We downloaded a Tandem pump and we upload that into your, tell me what happens next.
Yeah. So basically what happened next is that the algorithm analyzed the data in the same way that you and Diana will do that. We basically look on patterns, look when the patient is high, when the patient is low, what is the time and range of that specific patient? And then it analyzed each one of the insulin dosing event one by one. And when he's doing that, he's basically understanding, okay, what's going on here? Is it a problem of the ratios or is it a problem of a behavioral issues? So we know automatically to detect when a patient is taking a meal without insulin dosing around that. We know automatically to detect if he inject insulin after the meal. We know automatically to detect when he's doing overcorrection of hypoglycemia. And we know also to automatically detect if the problem is the carb ratio, the insulin sensitivity factor, or maybe the patient basal. And we know to say that not just on patient with insulin pump, we know to say the same thing about the combination of long-acting insulin and short-acting insulin and regular insulin. So we even brought inside all the various PK/PD of insulins that are out there in the market. So when you as the provider will take a look at that, what you will get, you will basically, you'll get a very specific recommendation for your patient to say, okay, Natalie, for patient John Doe, you need to increase his basals in the morning from 20 units if he's doing a long-acting insulin to 22. And if he's on a fixed dose, you need to fix his breakfast dose from 6 units to 8. And also pay attention, this specific patient is always forgetting to deliver his insulin for lunch. So we are that specific in terms of the recommendation that we can provide to you. And what is beautiful about that is it's a place to have a conversation with the patient, you know? Let's talk about that. Now you have all the insight in front of you. You don't need to go and dig into the data.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm curious. First of all, I'm just fascinated that you have Libre data in there. And my understanding is it's cloud to cloud, right?
Correct. Correct. We have cloud to cloud. We launched that into the market already in June, this year.
It's like old hat for them because none of us can get that done. Right, exactly. But you do.
Then push it, Abbott. We already launched that in June this year. Our customers already have it in front of them. You know, we are deployed in Yale New Haven Health System. We're now actually basically increasing in different locations, both endocrinology and primary care. We are in Boston Children, and so there are more locations that are trying to use that. So, you know, our customers already have that from Children.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous because Tidepool announced that they have an agreement, but it's not actually in there yet. And I know others are trying to get it. So that's amazing that you guys have it already. So for someone that's using just CGM and taking insulin, how do you get the insulin data? Like, do they have to enter it into your platform? Can they just record events in their CGM? Like, how does that work with the insulin?
Yeah, so that's interesting because, first of all, our FDA clearance allowed the algorithm to work on glucose information only. So we don't have to get the insulin data. Because we develop our proprietary way to detect insulin injections from the glucose traces by itself. So that's point number one. But if they're using our mobile app, they have the ability to use Bose calculator that we are provided to our customers as patients, and they can log all of those events in our mobile app. Now, what's very more interesting is that 60% of the population from our customers that downloaded our app continue to use that after 6 months. And if they're using the app, they're logging manually events on average 3 to 4 times a day, which is an amazing data.
Think about
the amount of data that you can get. Yes. Because right now, you don't have nothing with a patient that's doing
it. Right.
Wait. Okay. So I'm very fascinated by this. So there's a bolus calculator in the app. Does the glucose value come in automatically or do they have to look at their CGM and put that in?
Look in the CGM and put it in.
Okay. So it's not incorporating trend arrow at this time. It would just be the glucose file at that time.
Point glucose. Yeah.
Okay. And then can you describe, so if it doesn't have the insulin data, how does it use the glucose then by itself to make recommendations?
So we know what is the insulin treatment plan of the specific patient. You know, we get that as an initial settings from the doctor when he's onboarding a patient. So the assumption of the algorithm is that they're delivering by the plan. And we know the traces of the glucose pretty much. You have a conversation with the patient during the visit, and also in endodigital. You know, prior to asking a recommendation, you can go back and say, you know, after conversation with the patient, I want to make those changes in his plan. Now tell me what I need to do. So that's the way we're basically doing that.
Excellent. Okay.
And how do the changes happen? If the provider makes changes, does the patient, like, kind of like a pump, go in and change it, or does the provider do it on their end?
So it depends. If it's a pump patient, the provider can go do it. The patient can go do it. If it's an insulin injection patient, it can either, you know, pre-intend it over to him. If it's a face-to-face visit, it can just click approve and it's go automatically to the patient mobile file. But what is most, you know, impressive that we managed to do is the integration of the data back to the EMR. Because think about the enormous right. amount of documentation that you need to do after a visit. We're doing that with a click of a button. It goes both ways, to the patient and to your EMR. You get all the statistics. It gets all the visit summary already automatically created in your EMR. And at the end, what that creates, time saves. You know, in our customers this year alone, we saved almost 370 hours. How did you measure that? We did a study that with Yale and measure how much time we're saving per visit. We know how many encounters, you know, provided had it with our platform. Think about what they can do with this data to improve the care with the patient. They don't need to look on the screen. They can have a meaningful conversation with the patient. It's an enormous amount of time that could be saved here.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I'm curious about this onboarding, right? We talked a little bit about, so there's two, I have two questions. One is about onboarding. So let's start there. So I am a provider and I want to onboard my patient, Diana. So how is there, there's a web-based system that I go to like a Clarity, like where I'm going to add the patient, I'm going to put in their data or their information. Tell me what happens.
Yeah. What happened is basically dependent if we are, you know, did the EMR integration with you or not.
Okay.
Most prefer to do EMR integration with any customer, with every customer. We
okay.
very rarely want you to use an external platform. So if... Okay.
For Epic.
Problem. Yeah, we have it. We have Epic integration. We launched that at Yale. They've been working for that for the past two years already. Easy. You have a tab on the patient chart. You click it. You get a screen. All the data of the patient is automatically populated from the EMR, and you just click enroll. That time, the patient will get an invitation to his email to open up an account. He doesn't have to. If he wants, he can open up, but he doesn't have to. Then you basically click another button. You basically connect his Libre or his Dexcom with the cloud-to-cloud integration. That's it. All the data is there. If you want to get the smart algorithm advice, you will need to put in his initial settings. If you don't, you can do that. Just, you know, viewing the data and do whatever magic you want to do by yourself. Then when a patient comes in for a visit, you click, give me a recommendation in the EMR. A window open up, give you a recommendation, another click to review and approve, or if you want to change anything, data go to the EMR, recommendation go to the patient. That's it.
And when this is happening, is it over the last 2 weeks, 2 months? Can I pick what it's looking at? Tell me about that.
That's analyzing the last 3 weeks. Data. You know, that's the regulation, you know, that we have from FDA. So we are always analyzing the last 21 days. And we are okay to make a recommendations every 14 days.
Okay.
And how much, what percentage of data? Like, is it you need at least 70% of the data during that time?
Or so there is a definition. There is a definition of number of valid days that we're looking at. You know, we are looking at about 12. We need 12 valid days, and a valid day is a day that we have at least 2/3 of the data available in terms of CGM data.
Is it able to incorporate anything else? Like, let's say I'm just thinking, like someone puts in exercise events. Like, is it able to take that, or is it more that's the discussion with the patient?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, with my experience of developing automated insulin delivery technology and working on this, you know, technology also, we learned that almost everything is able to be, you know, presented with the relationship between insulin and glucose. Even if he's doing activity, you know, the insulin sensitivity will change. You will be able to detect that as a pattern between your insulin and glucose. Now, you're thinking from an AID perspective that need to basically intervene in real time. But what our algorithm is doing is retrospective analysis. So in retrospective analysis, what we're trying to find out is basically what is the average insulin treatment plan that will fit for that specific patient. We're not trying to answer, you know, acute need right now, what to do. Mm-hmm. Should I need to put a suspend on my basal, yes or no? We're looking on an average plan. So when you're looking on an average plan, if there is a pattern that happens every day, so let's assume every day he's doing a run in the evening, that will basically be able to be detectable through his glucose. And therefore, we'll be able to recommend that every time in the evening, he needs more, less, whatever he needs.
That's like, what about if you're the average person who runs every other day and then might do weightlifting every other day? What happens with that? I mean, I'm excited. I can't wait. I think what Diana and I are going to do is have us, she's going to onboard me. We're going to put my data in and we're going to see what it recommends. I would love to, right? We need to play with this a little bit, right? So that we can then talk about it more, which is why we have so many of the basic questions. But what if someone does something every other day or every, like I do soccer on Thursdays and I do, you know, bowling on Saturday. Listen, so we're looking at average, but it's close.
At the end, it all get to the question, does it impact your glucose? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And does it create a pattern? Yes or no?
Yep. Okay.
If it impact on your glucose and it's create a pattern, it will come up in the recommendation.
Okay.
I will give you a couple of more data points. You know, we did a study that we published. We took a data set of 15 patients and we run it through different providers. And we did it for people with type 1 and insulin pump. We did it with type 1 and insulin injection, type 2 and insulin injection. Do you know how many providers agree with their colleague on what to do with a static data set of a patient?
Not that many. Great.
About 40 to 50% agreement, which is yuck, you know?
Right.
Now, we are constantly monitoring how many times providers are changing the recommendations that are coming out from the algorithm.
Okay.
9 out of 10 providers agree with what the algorithm is saying within a boundary for clinically, you know, 20% difference between them, which is considered as clinically acceptable.
Wow.
9 out of 10.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So what I'm hearing, though, is if somebody had like a really chaotic routine and there weren't patterns, then just like for us, it'd be harder to make recommendation.
Sure. But, you know, at the end, we're looking on what can make an impact on population. And, you know, accessibility to care is an important topic for us. Now, if I'm getting 9 out of 10 endocrinologists agree with what EndoDigital is saying, think about what this technology can do to increase access to expert key level care. If we're going to bring it to, you know, CD in nurse educators, to primary care physicians, to all of the bunch of the population that has not been able to get to an expert like you and Natalie, Diana, or other, you know, expert endocrinologists. I think that's where we are very much excited to be in the next couple of years.
And have you guys made enhancements to the algorithms over the years, or do you see any, or is it kind of, you feel like it's where it needs to be now? It's about bringing it to more people.
It's like when you're going to a lawyer and you gave them, you know, a contract, and then a couple of years later, you give them the same contract that he already reviewed and you tell them, do you want to accept it? Do you want to make any changes? Same thing with algorithms. You know, we're never acceptable with what we're seeing. We're making improvements all the time. We are reviewing the data all the time, you know, and we're making those improvements to improve the clinical outcome around that. I think where we're looking at in the next couple of months, years, is to broader the type of insulin patients that we can onboard to our platform. Like I told you, in a pre-call, we have a version that was developed together with Barbara Davis Center that will provide help for control IQ patients that we intend to bring in front of the agency. We have a version that is about basal-only patients that we would like to bring in front of the agency in the next year. So we are constantly working on those improvements. And that's because, again, our mission is to bring it to as many type of patients as possible, focusing not on the endocrinology patients too, but the main focus will be on those that are being managed on the primary care side.
So I guess question, so it sounds like this is for MDI right now, and pump, right? But if someone's on a GLP-1 or other therapy in addition to that, can the algorithms still work right now?
Yeah, our assumption, you know, this is part of our regulatory clearance, is that there is no change in the background non-insulin glucose lowering medication while the provider is reviewing the algorithm recommendations. So it's okay to have GLP-1. It's okay to have other types of things. I think also, but you know, once we'll get more, you know, comfortable with our solution on insulin, we might even bring, you know, other types of recommendations to other types of drugs. That's the beauty about this technology, that it can be expanded not just into insulin. But there's another topic that I would like to talk to you about, is the fact that it's hard to bring technology to diabetes clinics. You know, everyone, that when you're trying to sell something to diabetes clinics is usually the one that doesn't have a lot of budget. It's not cardiology, right? It's not an OR. You know, it's easy to sell something to the OR. And I think that if we're not going to put that hat on our head, you know, thinking, okay, what can we do to help sustain financially clinics that treat people with diabetes, it will be hard to bring to them new technology. And one of the things that I'm proud of is that when we're measuring the financial benefit that we're bringing to clinics, you know, we got in the last year hard dollar value of about $500,000 to our customers, which is a big number.
Hard dollar value to how many customers and how many patients does that equate to, though, right? Like you had mentioned Yale, right?
Boston Children's Billing Clinic, and we're talking about, you know, close to 6,000 patients.
Okay, that's the number. So $500,000 per 6,000 patients, is that?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
And it's an important number, because at the end, if you can create a model where, you know, technology is being funded itself, you know, bringing value to the clinics and also being able to provide better care for our patients, that's exactly what we're looking for. You know, in a world where it's very hard on you know, budgets on health system to fund additional technology.
And it exists for billing, like the CGM interpretation, like the CPT 95251 codes.
For example, that's one of the ways that we're measuring that, yes.
Okay. So my next question is about cost. So this sounds great. I want to buy one today. How does this come into our clinics, and how do we get that? And I understand that it's going to be different for every hospital system, blah, blah, blah. Give us a range of what, like, do you do it? How do you start this? Do you do it? I follow, let's say, 65,000 people with diabetes at our hospital system, right? Now, obviously, I don't follow all those. Diana follows, I don't know how many, right? How do you approach it, and what does it look like? Is it comparative to something like Gluco or like Tidepool? Is it, where do you fall in all of that? I know you're very different from that, but where do you fall? Because I got to download the data someplace. I got to embed you into my charts. Where does that come from?
That's a fair question. I think none of the companies that you just mentioned are publishing their pricing. So it will be hard for me to say where I compare to them. I can tell you that we are in a place that we proved to be budget neutral to our customers. So basically, at the end, you don't need to pay for it. It's a technology that basically funds itself. So you're not looking at that from another, you know, budget line on your budget, but rather on, you know, you may be making an investment upfront, and then you're getting into a point that is basically returned by the end of the year. So you will be at least budget neutral.
But when you say that you're going to be budget neutral, does that include, because we're already billing for like the 95251 codes, we're already billing for all those, right? That starts all those things. Is it on top of that because of the time saved? Tell me what the...
So here's another data point for you. So A, not all of the clinics bill for 95251.
I get that. Yep, I'm very aware of
that. That's especially not the primary care. B, when we did a financial study in Billing Clinic, which is also an endocrinology clinic that bill for 95251, and we published that in our website, we saw an increase in capture rate of what they're on top of what they're currently billing. And the reason why there is an increase from a couple of reasons. One, you know, more providers in the clinic were not intimidated by the fact that they have CGM, so they will be able to interpret the data. Two, lacking in documentation. So, you know, when we are automatically bringing those documentation and we're following the right rules, we're helping them to increase their capture rate. So when I'm saying that I'm going to be a budget neutral, I'm saying about, you know, on top of what you're doing right now, there's no meaning of doing that. No, I'm not intending to take money from what you're doing right now. That's
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get that. Yeah. So what is the increase in capture rate? Approximately.
And we did, when we did it with Billing Clinic, it was about 60% increase in capture rate, and that's published. And we are now collecting, you know, at the end of the year, finally collecting the financial data from Yale, and hope we will be able to publish it if they will allow us to do it.
And that 60% is in primary care, not in endo, or was it in endo?
That's an endocrinology clinic. In primary care, it'll be hundreds of percents because they're
right. It's going to
be.
Yeah, primary care is tough for them to even figure out how to get the data, yet alone then interpret it and bill for it. I just want to switch gears. I know we got to wrap up, but with weekly insulin on the horizon, I mean, it's been approved like in Europe and in Canada. We hope eventually we'll get it here. Do you think your algorithm is going to be able to work with that?
The answer is yes. I think that, you know, because we are limited in you know, headcount, we're still a startup. There's, you know, we cannot do everything at once.
So
let's first wait for these weekly insulins to be approved by the FDA here in the United States. And then we will see when we can come up with a version that can support that. But, you know, technology wise, it is possible to support it.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. Anything else that you want to share? Anything else you're looking forward to?
Again, you know, we are here to help providers better manage people with diabetes. You know, some of the companies think that providers should be out of the loop. You know, we very much believe that, you know, providers are key, you know, stakeholders in improving the care of people with diabetes. I've never heard of a patient that wanted to kick out his doctor. You know, the doctors are important, not just from, you know, titrating insulin, but also from giving the support, the emotional support on top of that. And I think they are going hand in hand, you know, just providing something that will improve dosing without having the emotional support will not work. So we very much believe in the role of providers in this you know, market and in this journey. And our goal is to help many providers as possible to provide better care for people with diabetes.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I love that mission. I love embedding more AI, and I love keeping the sacred relationship with the healthcare provider and the person with diabetes. So thank you so much, Aaron, for joining us today. And that wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. And we hope to catch you again next time.